is heavily polarizing, and it's a monopoly in many places. For that reason, drug companies actually control the rights, develop drugs, and raise the prices. This is the biggest problem in the current and today's pharmaceutical industry. Artificial intelligence offers transformative potential in the realm of drug development by leveraging its ability to analyze vast data sets far beyond human capability. AI can identify patterns and insights that accelerate the discovery of new drugs. It can predict how different chemical compounds will behave and how likely they are to make an effective treatment. This not only speeds up the process of drug discovery, but also increases its accuracy, potentially leading to more effective and safer medications.
The science is complex, but the idea is really simple. Take hundreds, thousands of known drugs and test them on these miniaturized human organs, tiny liver, tiny brain, etc. And since these are drugs that are known, we can, known meaning you know which one of them is safe and which one of them has been found to be unsafe, we test them on these miniaturized human organs, we use nanosensors and microscopy and robotics to collect massive data, which trains the AI, so that then the AI can, when a new drug comes along, the AI can look at it and say, I've seen already hundreds of safe drugs, I've seen hundreds of non-safe drugs, I can now discern that this new drug is likely to be safe or unsafe, and what's more important, safe for whom? Mm-hmm. It's not just about because we're all different. Yeah. You know, in fact, when you stop and think about it, drug development until now has not been developed for Englishmen or Frenchmen or people from Israel. It has been developed for an average human being that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
It's almost akin to developing pet food for something that's between a cat, a dog, a goldfish, and a giraffe. We're all different. Currently, in clinical testing, women are not represented in 50% of the cases. Minorities are represented in 11% of clinical testing. 92% of all drugs fail in clinical trials because animals are very different from humans. We're not like mice. And so drugs that succeed in animal testing fail in clinical trials, and the other way around. In fact, if penicillin was invented today, it would probably be disqualified because it works well in human but not in animal testing. The ability to fine-tune, to personalize drugs to individual patients so that this is not just one pill fits all, which doesn't really work.
I reached out to LA-based music composer multiple times, he's an Emmy Award winning Lucas Cantor. Lucas had the privilege to work on a very exciting project in the early days of AI being used to work with music. This project is incredibly beautiful. In every corner of the world, in every culture throughout history, music has been an integral part of human experience. Its origins, lost in the mists of time, are as ancient as humanity itself. So let us embark on a journey to understand how this ancient art form is now changing thanks to AI, what the possibilities are, and where we are headed.
The idea for finishing Schubert's Unfinished Symphony was first brought to me by a friend of mine who's a PhD in Goldsmiths College in London. And this was originally supposed to be an academic exercise, but then Huawei got involved and wanted to fully produce it and make it into a piece of public relations and also into a piece of art. So I wasn't thinking about the implications of what we were doing. I was really just thinking about getting the job done. I was thinking about trying to accomplish the goal that my client had laid out for me and trying to make the best music possible. It wasn't until the piece was finished that I realized that we had accomplished something kind of amazing. I thought I was taking on a musical project and maybe an academic computer science type project. After I had finished it, I realized that it was really a philosophical project, and asking what does it mean that an artificial intelligence can write music is a profound question that only raises more questions. It raises the question of what does it mean to write music? What is music in the first place? Can I prove that I write music? Where does music come from? Technology in my lifetime, anyway, has moved incredibly fast. If J.S. Bach, who died in 1750, sat down at George Gershwin's desk, who was a 20th century composer, his learning curve would have been less steep than if myself in college tried to sit down at my desk today. You know, Bach would have sat down at Gershwin's desk and said, well, here's a manuscript paper. This seems to be a pen. Okay, I can write some music. Almost all the technology that I use today didn't exist even when I was in college, and I was in college when the iPod was invented. Schubert's Unfinished Symphony was lost in time, and it has been recaptured by artificial intelligence, and that is a profound and beautiful thing that technology was able to deliver to us. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's entirely true. I think what technology was able to deliver was a suggested way that Schubert might have finished his Unfinished Symphony, and I was able to channel that and arrange that. But Schubert is dead. His symphony was unfinished when he died, and no one is ever going to finish it. The fact that artificial intelligence was able to suggest a possible ending is interesting and is entertaining, but I don't know if it means anything profound for the world of music.
See, animals seem to start life with a large part of their nervous system knowing what to do. That's the reason why we breathe, why our heart beats, why babies know how to cry, or when to cry, and they need help.
Well, do you mean that instinct turns out to be some kind of programming that we're born with?
Yes, it's using our language. Let me show you some very interesting research that was done on the frog last year at MIT by Professors Letman and Maturano, which seems to indicate that some animals, at least, are born with very much more built-in information than we used to suspect was the case.
Well, does it show that we're born with a program?
Well, what it does show is that the frog, at least, the frog's eye reports only very specific information to the brain.
You mean that the optic nerve of the frog doesn't report everything it sees?
No, it reports only very specific things. Things which seem to be very important to the survival of the frog. Let's take a look at the next film.
Well, now the frog doesn't pay any attention to those dead flies. Isn't he hungry?
Sure, but his eyes don't see them. He's hungry, all right, watch.
Well, if he didn't eat any of the dead flies, why did he eat the fly on the string?
Well, you know, that's what Professor Letman's trying to find out. It seems that the frog only sees things that move. Here, Letman's looking through the microscope into the frog's brain, preparing to put a tiny electrode into one of the fibers in the frog's optic nerve.
You mean when the fiber sees something, it'll send a signal through the electrode that we can see?
Yes, and you'll hear it, too. Now Professor Letman is putting a target, a semicircular hemisphere, in front of the frog's eye. And then, using a magnet on the back of the target, he can move a small metal disc around the target until he finds the point at which the particular fiber is looking. There, he's found it. See, it sends an electrical signal through the electrode.
Well, what's the professor doing now?
Well, he's trying to find out just what kind of things make this particular fiber react.
Looks to me as though this fiber reacts every time something moves.
It does.
Well, that could explain why the frog didn't eat the dead flies. They didn't move, so he couldn't see them.
Well, that's Professor Letman's suggestion, anyway. He said to himself, suppose the fibers in a frog's eye look only for specific kinds of things in the world around them. Now, as we've seen, one kind of fiber apparently only reports movement. Here, Professor Letman is looking for a different kind. See, this fiber reports to the brain when anything small enough to eat moves into view, and it keeps reporting as long as the object remains there.
Well, why did it stop reporting when the light went out and then fail to report when it came back on?
Well, think of the light going off as a shadow passing over it. Now, I'll say, and apparently in a dangerous situation. The frog's eye only reports the danger, not food.
And here we don't measure up.
Yeah, so the Hollywood version of robots is kind of interesting. So I used to think that it was a bit silly, the Hollywood version of robots, where there were literally people dressed up in a suit that would walk around. And then a whole lot of researchers around the world started to develop humanoid robots, right? So robots that look like people. And people would question why do that? Because, you know, it's very difficult. Right? But there's a very good reason to do it, which is that we've built our whole world for us, for humans. So door handles are a certain height, kitchen benches, tops for a certain height. The world has been constructed for a humanoid. So therefore, if you make a humanoid, almost by definition, it will be able to do a lot more than a robot of a different size or a different shape. Right? So the classic example is a lift. You know, if your robot goes into a lift and it hasn't got a finger and it can't press the button, it's not going to be able to use the lift, right? I mean, that's a simple thing. Opening doors is the same thing. So the Hollywood version of humanoid robots, they had that version because they wanted people dressed up in a suit because they couldn't make a real robot, but it turns out it's actually a very sensible thing to do.
So I guess the most promising initial forays into robots that cook and fold laundry, for example, are in sort of contrived environments. So rather than having a robot in your home that uses the stove the same way as you do, it would have a specialist stovetop, it would have a special set of cooking pans and equipment, and the environment is set up so that the robot is most able to do its job. The next stage after that will hopefully be robots that are a bit more capable and have good manipulation, good vision skills, that can actually move into the home and you can trust to hold a few litres of boiling hot water near you as you get ready for dinner. Obviously that's a little way off, but it's definitely not impossible.
Benefit of AI is that it can take the drudgery out of some human tasks. Industrial robots have traditionally been on the production line working tirelessly. But after being kept separate from humans, now they are coming out of their cages. And important questions arise. For instance, can AI-driven machines collaborate meaningfully with human beings?
The other area I think we'll see more and more of, and we're already beginning to see, is things like robots that cooperate and work with humans. So there's a lot of robotics previously has worked in things like factories or other controlled environments where there might be humans, but very much the robots are the prime thing and the humans have to get the hell out of the way, to be perfectly blunt. What we're seeing more and more of is the Roomba-style thing, which are robots in the vacuum cleaner case, pretty trivial, but nonetheless, they've got to work in a space where there's not just humans, but dogs, furniture, doors, you name it. We're going to see more and more of these sort of humanoid-type robots or telepresent-type robots, which are deliberately mimicking humans in various different ways. So I think we'll see more and more of that humanoid robot than the more specific functional robots like the Roombas or other such devices.
It's quite a complex business, robotics. So what we've had is people, small research communities, digging down into a particular problem. So there's the navigation folk, and they're trying to work out about how do you get from point A to point B? How do you do it if you've got a map? How do you do it if you don't have a map? We've got other groups of people who are figuring out how you pick things up. Other group of people figuring out how do you understand a picture? How do you understand spoken commands? So all these different groups looking at very narrow aspects of robotics. Go to a robotics conference and that's what you'll find. There's a room full of people discussing each one of these things. Slowly we're starting to integrate that together. But so far we haven't really built anything that is as competent as a human being. We had people who worked on feet and legs. Now you see quite good humanoid robot machines. So a machine with arms and legs can walk over all sorts of quite complicated terrain. but they don't have a vision system like we have it. That's probably the next step of integration. And the other area of integration that's lacking is the ability to pick things up. So it's hands, fingers and arms, the ability to grasp. And not just grasp something, but to manipulate it in our hands. So I can, you know, I can pick up a knife, manipulate it in my fingers and then hand it to you, handle first. We're a long way from doing that with robots at the moment.
On the other hand, so to speak, advances in mobility by robotics companies have seen exceptional demonstrations of both agility and speed.
In the past, roboticists, I think, often felt limited in that even if they developed really smart robot artificial intelligence, the walking robots, the driving robots, were not very capable.
I Love It, written by the Isaac Asimov.
If you've heard about AI in the last couple years, chances are the technology you heard about was developed here, the breakthroughs behind it happened here, the money behind it came from here, the people behind it live here. It's really all been centered here in the Bay Area. A lot of the startups that are at the leading edge of AI, so that's OpenAI, Anthropic, Inflection, names you might not yet be familiar with, they are backed by some of the big companies you already know that are at the top of the stock market. So that's Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, Google. And, you know, these companies are based here, many of them in the Bay Area. So for all of the discussion that we've seen about AI policy, there's actually very little that tech companies have to do. A lot of it is just voluntary. So what we are really depending on as guardrails is the benevolence of the companies themselves. So Gabe, I think, is an example of a lot of the young people who are coming to the movement now, who are not ideological, who are really interested in the technology, who are aware of its potential harms and see this as the most important thing that they could do with their time, their opportunity to work on what many of them call like the Manhattan Project of their generation.
You have to realize that unlike some other very general technologies that have been developed in the past, AI is mostly being pushed, especially the frontier systems, by a small group of scientists in San Francisco. And this very small group of people are developing really powerful technologies we know very little about. Some of this maybe comes from a lot of historical techno-optimism among especially the startup landscape in the Bay Area. A lot of people are kind of used to this move fast and break things paradigm that sometimes ends up making things go well. But as is the case, if you're developing a technology that affects society, you don't want to move so fast that you actually break society.
Pausing AI wants a global and indefinite pause on the development of frontier artificial general intelligence.
My name is Dr. Inongo Lumumba-Kasongo, aka Samus. I'm a rapper, I'm a producer, and I'm an assistant professor at Brown University in the music department. Initially, I wasn't sort of tapped into all of the discussions that were happening around AI. Of course, peripherally, I was sort of listening, watching, reading, but I really started to tap into these conversations when I noticed what was happening at the intersection of hip-hop and AI, and that's when I realized, whoa, this thing is moving really quickly. I mean, last year, we were talking about sort of AI-generated rapper, and this year we're talking about rappers like Drake and artists like The Weeknd having their voices actually sort of cloned using AI technologies. And so the speed at which this has become sort of an immediate challenge for working artists is very alarming.
Ultimately is the logic of capitalism. And as a human creator, what you can do is try not to be left behind. As a Chinese, we always feel that, like, technology, if you use it in a smarter way, it can, like, push you, uplift you yourself to become a smarter, greater creator. You know, machine and AI could do the job faster, cheaper, and they don't have strike, and, you know, they don't resist any ridiculous demand from the clients or from the bosses. And I can see that Chinese companies are already, like, using it to replace human labors. So I think this is a very critical moment right now for the creators around the world. So this is something happening, and it's gonna be big in the next 3 to 5 years.
So for folks like myself, who, you know, I've been able to build a life for myself, but I would definitely not say that I'm in the sort of like top tier of the music industry. There's a way that I think we're able to skirt under the radar and continue doing work as we're doing it, because it's so much about experimentation. It's so much about trying out weird things. And AI is so much about averaging. It's the people who are invested in playing in that space of the anomaly and playing with the unexpected who will sort of continue to thrive.
The impact of artificial intelligence on our society is far-reaching and complex. How can we regulate a technology that's developing so quickly and whose potential is almost impossible to gauge? The United States is struggling. Here in Washington, the tech industry's influence is huge, and governing majorities are fragile.
The fact of the matter is that the U.S. government moves slowly. It is a democracy. That slowness is built into the system. The U.S. government is not supposed to be efficient and not supposed to be able to tackle problems quickly, because a government that is too efficient, you know, can use that against its own citizens too. I think that we've now reached a state in our society that many philosophers and writers in the 20th century warned about, which is the inability to govern technology due to the increasing pace of change.
Well, I certainly would not bet against democracies, but it will be a really tough adjustment period.
The first major piece of legislation aimed at regulating artificial intelligence on a far-reaching scale came from the EU, the AI Act.
I definitely kind of really admire the European Union for being essentially the leader in this space. They took on this kind of regulation very seriously before anyone else really thought seriously about it.
Jonas Androulis has come to Brussels. Together with other startup founders, he wants to let politicians know that strong regulation could put smaller European players at a disadvantage compared to the competition in the US and China.
Meetings like this are always a bit difficult because you say your piece and you never really know what reaction you're going to get. A few new people will listen, and of course it's clear that cooperation within Europe and with Europe is important, but it's always hard to say how much we can achieve here and now.
Thank you.
Und ich hätte, also ich kann natürlich auch einfach reden.
I could just talk. I've prepared something.
It's your session. You can decide where you want to sit.
No.
Good afternoon to all of you. I'm pleased to welcome you to the European Parliament, to this meeting, an important meeting at the right time.
Something that will happen, and we already see it, like basically a few steps down the road, is there, like the cloud, like the hyperscalers have done with cloud compute, there will be an infrastructure for general intelligence.
Putting up posters so that people can get more information. No, the AI issue is complicated. A lot of the public does not understand it. The government does not understand it. You know, it's really hard to keep up with the developments. Another interesting thing is that most of us working on this have no experience in activism. What we have mostly is like technical knowledge and familiarity with AI that makes us concerned. AI safety is still very much the minority. And then actually a lot of the biggest AI safety names are working at AI labs. You know, I think some of them do great work, but they're still much more under the influence of the broader, you know, corporation that's driving toward development. I think that's a problem. I think that somebody from the outside ought to be telling them like what they need to do. And unfortunately, the case with AI now is that like there aren't external regulatory bodies that are really up to the task of regulating AIs.
From the same mouth, you're hearing this thing could kill us all, and I am going to keep building it. I think part of the reason you have so much resistance to the AI safety movement is because of the dissonance between people who talk about their genuine fear of the consequences and the risks to humanity if they build this AI god. So much of the debate around here has these really religious undertones. That's part of why they say that it can't be stopped and shouldn't be stopped. It really feels like, you know, and they talk about it in that way, like I'm building a god, and they're building it in their own image, right?
I love the human and human society, and I love the science fiction. I would like to create such kind of technologies to contribute to the human and human society. And so I love to read the science fiction books, and also I love to see the movies in science and fiction. Terminator's movies, also one of them also, yes. But unfortunately, some movies in US or European areas, most of the cases, technologies always attack the humans. In the actual fields, technologies should be a work for the human and human society.
In the movie The Terminator, classic movie, Cyberdyne is a fictional tech company that created the software for the Skynet system, the AI system that becomes self-aware and goes rogue. Cyberdyne's role in the story is to represent the dangers of AI getting out of control and to serve as a cautionary tale for the real world.
Is Cyberdyne named after the firm in Terminator?
No. In Terminator stories, that company is named Cyberdyne Systems. Yes.
Obviously, at some literal level, maybe you can unplug some advanced AI systems, and there are definitely a lot of hopes. People are trying to actively make it easier to do that. Some of the regulation now is focused on making sure that data centers have some good off switches, because currently a lot of them don't. In general, this might be more tough than people realize in the future. We might be in a state in the future where we have pretty advanced AI systems widely distributed throughout the economy, throughout people's livelihoods. Many people might even be in relationships with AI systems, and it could be really hard to convince people that it's okay to unplug some widely distributed system like that. there are also risks of having a military arms race around developing autonomous AI systems, where we might have many large nations developing wide stockpiles of autonomous weapons. And if things go bad, just like in the nuclear case, where you could have this really big flash war that destroys a lot of the world, you might have a bad case where very large stockpiles of autonomous weapons suddenly end up killing a lot of people from very small triggers. So probably a lot of catastrophic misuse will involve humans in the loop in the coming years. They could involve using very persuasive AI systems to convince people to do things that they otherwise would not do. They could involve extortion or cyber crimes or other ways of compelling people to do work. Unfortunately, probably a lot of the current ways that people are able to manipulate other people in order to do bad things might also work with people using AI or AI itself manipulating people to do bad things.
Like blackmail, yeah.
Another important thing is Homo sapiens changes the very awful wolf to pretty dog. Homo sapiens has, of course, the similar excellent brain and technologies and partners. Now we are here. So what's next? We human being, Homo sapiens, obtained new brains, okay? Additionally, the original brain plus brains in the cyberspace. Also, we fortunately have the new partners, AI friends and robots and so on, okay? Robotic dog also. Yeah?
What worries me a little bit more about this whole scenario is that AI technology doesn't necessarily need to be a tool for global capitalism, but it is. It's the only way in which it's kind of being developed. And so in that model, of course, we're going to be repeating all the kind of things that we've already done in terms of empire building and people being exploited, natural resources being extracted. All these things are going to repeat itself because AI is only another kind of thing to exploit. I think we need to think about not just as humans who are inefficient, humans that are unpredictable, humans that are unreliable, but finding beauty or finding value in the fact that we are unpredictable, that we are unreliable.
So probably like most emerging technologies, there will be disproportionate impacts on different kinds of people. A lot of the global south, for example, hasn't had as much say in how AI is being shaped and steered. At the same time, though, some of these risks are pretty global. When we especially talk about catastrophic risks, these could literally affect everyone. If everyone dies, then everyone is kind of a stakeholder here. Everyone is potentially a victim.
20% is the total versus how many non-CS students. Do you still plan to just keep doing research? I know there was the PhD versus grad school.
Yeah. I am somewhat uncertain about grad school and things, I think I could be successful, but also maybe with AI timelines or with other considerations, trying to cash out impact in other ways might be more worth it. Median OpenAI salary, supposedly $900,000. Which is quite a lot. It seems definitely the industry people have a lot of resources, and fortunately all the top AGI labs that are pushing forward capabilities also hire safety people.
I think a reasonable world where people are making sure that emerging technologies are safe is necessarily going to have a lot of safeguards and monitoring. Even if there's a small risk, it seems pretty good to try to mitigate that risk further to make people more safe.
Peace and the military side are very near. I carefully consider how to treat it. So when I was born, there is no AI systems and there's no computer systems. But the current situations, the young people start their life with AI and robots and so on. Some technologies with AI will support their growing up processes.
People have been pretty bad about predicting progress in AI. 10 years in the future, there might be even wilder paradigm shifts. People don't really know what's coming next. But I suppose David beat Goliath. There's still some chance.
The
vast majority of AI researchers are focused on building safe, beneficial AI systems that are aligned with human values and goals. While it's possible that AI could become super intelligent and pose an existential risk to humanity, many experts believe that this is highly unlikely, at least in the near future.
This, chances are you're human. But what does it actually mean to be human? For millennia, the answer was simple. We were the pinnacle of creation. We were the only ones who could make art, talk to each other, play chess.
And all the value creation, all the apps, all the new innovations in the world will build upon. And for us, there will be no second chance. If we cannot move fast, then we won't be able to try again in 12 months. Thank you.
That will give Europe the ability to deal with the rapid evolution of AI and to reap the most benefits from it. And we have worked, first and foremost, to ensure our citizens' rights and freedoms are not just respected, but protected and strengthened. We don't want mass surveillance. We don't want social scoring. We don't want predictive policing in the European Union. Full stop.
My name is Dragoș Tudorache. I'm a member of the European Parliament, representing the Renew Group, the Liberal Group in the European Parliament. I'm a judge by profession. I was also a member of government in Romania, Minister of Digitalization, Minister of Interior, prior to coming to Parliament. AI will play very much into the power balance. Why? Because it drives our economies, but not only. It becomes also a geopolitical factor, both in terms of how warfare is going to look like, but also how this technology will play into many of the processes that will keep one part of the world or the other competitive. And therefore, also the way you write the standards and how those standards become globally accepted standards is very important in that power balance that I mentioned earlier. So we're going to see very soon also, I think, a competition or possible clash in terms of global standards. And that is why we have to take measures to protect our interests and also to make sure that, again, our understanding of the role of technology is one that is shared by as many on the global stage as possible.
In renegotiations, Germany, France and Italy lobbied again to soften the rules of the AI Act to protect domestic players like Aleph Alpha from heavy regulation. But in the end, the European Parliament prevailed.
In terms of regulation, we're the economy that's leading the way. And there's a concern that that will take too much creativity out of the market. So in Europe, we're better at regulation than at putting technology on the market, unfortunately.
The truth is, it's ultimately going to be good for the tech industry as well to be regulated. Level playing field. Even seatbelts in cars were viciously opposed by the auto industry at first. But now, then when we got the law saying all cars have to have seatbelts, they started to sell much more cars.
Shao has travelled to Shenzhen. In order to keep his team on the same page, the CEO has to visit the various company offices regularly.
So you see that there's red letters on the building, that is basically our office. But we are not that big, we are just one small room inside that big building.
wants to take his company, Gina, to the next level. That will require all his employees to pull together as much as possible.
Yeah. Oh, what a shit.
I'll just put this down. I brought some waffles. Try them. They're delicious.
I told them you have to eat now and make a happy face to the camera.
When I work at Germany, people greeting each other, like telling jokes, talk random stuff, football match yesterday, all this kind of stuff. Here is more introvert. I'd say the office is more introvert. It's just like different working cultures. Both of them are pretty productive under my whip, right? I always think that a sequence of small success what makes a team stronger and makes the team more confident on building things. Because larger success means larger hope. A larger hope could mean larger disappointment. Here in the startup, everything moves very quickly. Then we become a little bit stressed, we become a little bit nervous because, you know, we could lose the advantages against the other competitors, against the market. It's not about what we did, it's about how people perceive us, right, on what we did. Meanwhile, in Germany, there is also a team working on releasing a new large language model. Yesterday, the leaders told me that this model can be ready on Monday, but it has been postponed for many times, so I have to see like how it goes.
In the evening, Han Xiao has another meeting with a potential investor. On the way, he calls his technical director to ask whether the launch of the new language model is going as planned.
Hey, Wan Nan. Your embedding platform has to get into the global best model list. This company won't succeed unless everyone does their best. If you don't get into the top 10, it'll be much more difficult. Who uses a platform that's not in the top 10? You need to think more about these practical things. Is the LinkedIn post done? The Twitter post? There needs to be a strategy here. Okay, that's it. Bye.
We want to, you know, get into the top 10 model. A leaderboard. Our models get into the top 10, but you know, the team just told me, the German team just told me they probably cannot get into the top 10. That's why I get a little bit like, you know, intense on my conversation, because I said this is something that we promised to ourselves. You know, in this world, it's very, very attention-based world, and if you cannot get into the top 10, it's just like, even if you get into like number 11, right? Nobody cares, right? So this is why, you know, I'm telling the team that it's not about engineering only. You also have to think about the whole company, like the marketing, sales, that all depends on the number 10, the top 10 models of this leaderboard.
Hi, Grace.
Oh,
Although computers are able to do all of these operations, it must be remembered that they are programmed by man. This human factor is often overlooked by the authors of science fiction. Often in these stories, the computers take control and man becomes a slave. Computers are actually a type of servant to man. They must be told each step to take. Once instructed, they can carry out their mission very quickly and with a high degree of accuracy. Computers then are a tool that man has invented to free him from repetitious work and allow him to do more creative thinking.
Is my singing debut. Edie and I sing a duet, and we even have backup singers. Edie gets to sing all the time when she does the telephone demo, but I never get to. This is my big chance. Wa 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 wa. Me me me. Excuse me, just getting tuned up. I bet you won't even notice my accent when I sing. Well, here we go.
night wind, cold and melancholy, wail a blue finale for my tragedy, like a miserere meant for only me, while I linger weary neath the willow tree. Right here our romance was started, here again we parted, when I set you free. All my thoughts are jumbled, everything is blurred, all the world has crumbled, shattered by a word. The end has come, my heart is numb, 'twas like a bolt from the blue above. I can't believe it, but you're gone, darling, and here lies love. The sky is dark, I hear a lark, he sounds as sad as a mournful dove. The dew appears like the tears of dawn, darling, for here lies love. All my dreams lost beyond recall, dreams of spring blasted into fall. Dry. There's only one thing I'm conscious of. I only know I can't go on, darling, and here lies love. My eyes are dry. There's only one thing I'm conscious of. I only know I can't go on, darling.
Sometimes I felt like I've been in a hole, a vacuum that stretches on, an airplane wing in the bowl, a drum of love kissing the velvet glove. I want to be a shopping cart, I want to be Ed McMahon. Won't you dig my earth? Heads on posts and dogs that spit up drool, an Arab in the store 24, a film of phlegm upon the floor of love kissing the velvet glove. I want to be a sweaty palm, I want to be like chewing gum. your gorgeous tan. Show your gorgeous tan. Sometimes I felt too bad to be sick. I'm taking a piss on the mystery train. I badmouth flags and Nazi planes and you.
These days at your local Legion,